after wondering what I have right up here. Some of you know, because when I walked in earlier this morning carrying this contraption, two or three of you said to me, "Oh, an Instant Pot. An Instant Pot." How many of you have an Instant Pot? Raise your hand high. Oh my, that's about, I would say easily, that's probably a third of the people who are gathered around together this morning. Fact is, this is not just like your typical old-fashioned pressure cooker that you steam and pressure years ago. They have refined this product to the point that you can do all kinds of things with food that you never were able to do before. I'll tell you right now, you won't get a better mix, consistency of rice than you'll get with this Instant Pot. You can take chicken that is frozen and put it in there and set it to where it thaws that chicken out pretty quickly and then cooks it, and it comes out and it's not dry, it's flaky, it's tender. 20 to 25 minutes for ribs. You can even put an entire chicken in there. It is an amazing thing. And so when you think of the good that can be done under this kind of pressure for food, you think, hey, pressure, sometimes it's a good thing, right? And as we've been talking about in this series, overload, sometimes pressure or stress in and of itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. Stress is normal. Pressure is normal. We all need a certain amount of pressure, or even use the term stress, to get things done in terms of what we want to accomplish and our schedules. But it's one thing to talk about, you know, a good kind of pressure to move us or motivate us to do what we need to do. And that's quite another thing to feel like we're living in a pressure cooker in our lives. And filled with such anxiety and angst and living in a state of chaos that we really feel like we're losing control. So what we've been trying to do the last couple of weeks is encourage you, encourage ourselves, encourage all of us to think about ways that we can deal with that overload, that stress, that anxiousness, that chaos that is such a part of life. We know that needless anxiety and excessive anxiety, I think all of us would admit that when it comes right down to it, it doesn't do us much good, does it? Very few of us think, you know, I'm dealing with a situation, it's a tough one, I'm under pressure, I need to worry about it more. And what I need to do is think about it so much that I have trouble sleeping at night, and then what I also want to do is wake up in the morning and think about it the first thing, and then I just want to dwell on it all day long. That's what I want. That's how I'm going to handle this situation. Somebody did a study, and this is years ago, but I have remembered it for a long, long time, and that is a lot of the things, in fact, maybe half of the things that we worry about, maybe half of the things we worry about have already happened. So about 50%, and so we worry about what we've done or what we've done in the past may affect the present, but it relates to what we've done in the past. About 25-30% of the other are things that we worry about that might happen in the future that end up not happening. So have you ever worried about something, had anxiousness over something, you think something bad's going to happen, or you're concerned about something, a situation, and then you find out later a lot of what you worried about never really transpired. And then you have that 15% maybe that's left over of things that are going to happen, whatever that is. So 15%, it's going to happen. But out of that 15% of things that we worry about that are going to happen, we only have control over about maybe half of those things. Because there are a lot of things that are going to happen that we worry about. They're going to happen whether we worry about them or not, right? And so we sometimes, if we get caught up in this anxiousness, we can end up being so worried and upset and focused on the 92% of the things that we really don't have control over, that the amount or the things that we do have control over, we're so spent and so stressed, so worried, uptight, that we've lost the ability, really, maybe to take action and do something that we need to do. I believe there's an answer, and I know that you believe there's an answer, and I know that those of us gathered here this morning who are people of faith believe ultimately that the answer is in God, and it's not in us. And so, whether it was Nick's illustration last week with the rope and everything that rope and that stress and dealing with time it represented, there's a point that we just have to let go of the rope and just trust God. Or there's a point that we need to understand. The first and foremost, in terms of things we need to do, we need to just go ahead and take that leap of faith. And so maybe it's the time for me to say, God, I don't know what everything that's going to happen, but I'm going to stand on this platform and I'm going to jump off and do this zip line, whether I'm fully comfortable doing that zip line or not. And so we can illustrate it in all kinds of ways, but the bottom line, it's serious. We need to understand what's at stake. And we need to understand that we're not just talking about something that is an adult problem. In other words, it's not just the 30-year-olds and the 40-year-olds and then on the 50, 60, 70-year-olds that are stressed out. There's a statistic that is given by Dr. Robert Leahy, and he says that the average child today, he's a known psychologist, an author, the average child today exhibits the same level of anxiety. Now, think about this a minute. The average child today has the same level of anxiety that the average psychiatric patient had in 1950. And there's empirical data to back that up. They recently did a study with 200,000 incoming freshmen, surveying them, and it pretty much came down to the fact that we're today living at a time of all-time lows among college freshmen in health, emotional health, and stability. The American Journal of Medicine has said that during the 20th century, with each succeeding generation in the 20th century, I know we're in the 21st, but in the 20th century, the last century, that each succeeding generation was three times more likely to deal with depression than the generation before it. And so, we talk about this pressure, we talk about this anxiety, we talk about feeling that pressure, and I think we all understand it comes out sometimes in very negative, hurtful, harmful ways. We don't always recognize it, but many of us do, and we feel it. You feel the pressure. And it can end up being very, very destructive. By accident, a couple of weeks ago, I found a book on my Kindle in the Kindle store. One of the reasons I purchased it was because it was only $1.99. And it was an interesting subject of something that I had never read about before. I'd never read about volcanoes of any kind. Now, I love disaster books, so I can tell you about the Galveston flood, the Johnstown flood. I can tell you about the earthquakes, but I'd never read about a volcano. And this is something that I'm personally surprised. I did not know about this because it happened in our hemisphere, and it was the worst volcanic disaster in the 20th century, the worst. And it occurred, some of you may have seen this mountain if you've gone to the Caribbean. It's on Martinique. And back at the turn of the last century, there had been, mild eruptions and ash coming from the volcano, but there was a point in the early 1900s when the activity started increasing. The ash around St. Pierre and other localities increased as well. There were sometimes, maybe in the week leading up to the eruption of this volcano, there were a couple of occasions of fissures occurring in the earth, opening up while there were workers working at the foot of the mountain of Mount Pelée, and it's pronounced Pelée, but I couldn't do the little emphasized things over there, but it's Pelée, Mount Pelée. And there were actually warnings. There was pressure building up in this volcano, but some people totally ignored what was going on, and there were others who were trying to kind of suppress the desire of some folks because they were afraid to leave because there was an upcoming election and they wanted to make sure everybody was there to vote. And so there's all kinds of interesting things surrounding this eruption just right down there in the Caribbean. Bottom line is that when it finally exploded, 30,000 people, the entire town of St. Pierre that was at the foot of this volcanic mountain, 30,000 people were killed in a matter of minutes. Heat up to 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, lava, ash effects going down that mountain and in the atmosphere that instantly killed people just by burning. Some people who tried to escape, their blood began to boil, and then they just fell in their tracks. Guess how many survivors in this disaster? Does anybody know? We're not going to play the guessing game, but three. Three. Out of 30,000, a whole town wiped out. But there were warnings, and there were concerns. Some people chose to ignore the warnings. Some people dismissed the warnings. Some people tried to suppress the warnings, but there were warnings nonetheless. What happens when we don't do what we need to do to relieve the pressure before we explode, before we become even more destructive? Sometimes that pressure goes inward and produces depression, a desire to check out, to burn out. Sometimes that pressure is caused by a trauma when we were younger, and it comes out later on in our lives in all kinds of destructive ways. But I think you and I would admit that it's not just about what's happening within ourselves when we're dealing with all of this angst, this pressure. We recognize that we don't just affect ourselves, but we affect others too, don't we? It's not just about us. Us is important, but it's not just about us. So Paul, as he writes to these Christians at Ephesus, and as he speaks to us through the power of his Holy Spirit today, says, In your anger, recognizing that there is going to be anger, sometimes caused by pressure, in your anger, don't sin. And there's an angle on this, and I'm not getting into it this morning, but it's not going to be the main point of what I have to share. There is a legitimate angle on the idea of a righteous kind of anger. And so we should not feel that it's always wrong to feel angry. There are certain situations and context related to our own personal lives, things going on in the world that should bring to our hearts and our minds a sense of righteous indignation. When people are hurt or abused, or people are neglected when they shouldn't be, when people are unjustly treated, there should be a sense, a feeling of righteous indignation within us about those situations, and even when we might be the subject of things that naturally might make us angry. But that's not the focus of what I'm talking about this morning. The subject of my lesson is not righteous anger or righteous indignation. It's the anger that can become so intense and so hot and so fiery that it becomes destructive and is a part of what we actually do see in the world today, and a lot of writers have written about it, an epidemic of anger, hostility. And when it's white hot, it can destroy everything in its path. I was reading an article about this lady's viewpoints, and she has some really good points. Her name's Zoe Williams, about the effects of social media and anger, and how sometimes social media can kind of feed that anger and intensify that anger, whatever that anger is about. And so she says, listen with me if you would. Normally when we get angry, we show a natural tendency to get closer to what made us angry and try to eliminate it. Like any stimulant, interesting, she calls anger a stimulant. But in some ways it can be, right? Because you can feed on it. Like any stimulant, it has addictive properties. You become habituated to it and start to rove around looking for things to make you angry. Rage has become an illusion of power. The way the Incredible Hulk takes peculiar pride in the destructive potential of his strong emotion. The important consequences are not for our own health, but rather for that of society as a whole. Unprocessed anger pollutes the social sphere. Every outburst legitimizes the next. And we have landed, I like to think by accident, on a technology that perpetuates it and amplifies it, occasionally, productively, but more often to no purpose at all. Kind of like if those of you who remember the old version of the Hulk. For those of you who are younger, the guy on the left, he has long since passed away. But back when I was a kid, one of the shows we liked to watch was The Incredible Hulk. And The Incredible Hulk was Bill Bixby, who from some freak thing of science and taking in too many types of rays, of some sort of radiation, transformed him into a raging giant whenever he got angry. In fact, one of the more famous quotes from the show, and I actually went on YouTube and looked it up and saw it again, and I was going to play it this morning but decided not to, was Bill Bixby being prodded by somebody, and Bill Bixby saying, "You wouldn't like it when I'm angry." And you remember what happened. He got angrier and angrier and turned into that mass of muscle and anger destroying everything in his path. Now, you may not be there. There's a spectrum with this whole anger issue. But you may very well have been at places even this week where you don't want to be and you didn't want to be. Very few of us who are angry do we like the person who gets up and says, I'm going to worry about things this morning. Very few of us wake up and say, you know, I got to get somebody today. But unchecked, words bring pain on the attack. They raise our blood pressure, and they can hurt others. And sometimes, at the far end of the spectrum, the anger becomes so evil that it does what that terrorist gunman did in New Zealand this week when he went on his rampage. Yeah, it can get out of control, can't it? But I believe that wherever we are, God can work in us and on us and in our hearts. That there are things that we can do, such as heeding the advice of Paul here when he says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. In other words, don't let it get to the point to where it's boiling over and hurting not only yourself, but hurting others too. Because just as a reminder, this is reality. It doesn't just affect us. It affects those around us. There is a collateral damage that comes from our anger that's experienced by our children, by our coworkers, by our friends. And so the child grows up in a home where mom and dad are always arguing, or they're at each other's throats, maybe not literally, sometimes physically. Sometimes it may take a form of being more passive aggressive, but it's there nonetheless. And it affects our kids. What our children and our grandchildren see in mom and dad and grandmom and granddad makes a difference. And it affects them. And so we feel that pressure. And we respond in whatever way maybe we're inclined to respond. It may take the form of addiction or anger or depression. You know, just go down the list. And the irony is that those who experience hurt or trauma or grow up in a home where mom and dad are always arguing, or when dad physically abuses mom, many times that child will be far more likely to grow up doing the very thing that he saw growing up and hating. It's called modeling. But Paul here provides answers, and there are answers we need to think about. First of all, or secondly, besides not letting the sun go down in your wrath and understanding where things are, this whole concept of speaking truthfully, being honest. Paul says here, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor. Be honest. And so I think the first thing that we need to do in terms of taking steps in getting to a different place is being honest with the anger that I'm experiencing or dealing with in my life, and having the boldness to talk to somebody about it. Or if I'm seeing that in the lives of somebody else, being willing to go to them and be a peacemaker in helping other people live with more peace and less chaos in their lives. It relates to conflict resolution, but it's so much more than that. But there's just this idea of being honest, of being truthful. But, you know, there's a fine line between being honest and being truthful and crossing that line into being hurtful or abusive. Sometimes it's related to things we have absolutely no control over. And sometimes that's when we can get the most upset. Last time Jeannie and I went to Gatlinburg, we rented a car. We typically will rent a car so we don't have to worry about trouble driving or anything like that. We'll get a newer model. We travel. It's all good. We've never had any issues before until this last time. And so we stop in Caryville, Tennessee. Don't know if you've been there, but that's at the top of the big old mountain before you start heading down to, whatever that place is down at the bottom of it, towards Knoxville. There is a place here. Get out. Have to take a bathroom break. And I come out, and Jeannie says, there's a bulge on the tire here. And I look at it. There was a big bulge on the tire. To the point I thought, this isn't safe for us to be driving on this. We hadn't hit a pothole, so apparently it had been there, and we hadn't noticed it since we'd been driving from Cincinnati. And so we look at our paperwork. It says to contact roadside assistance, and so that's what we did. Had an 800 number, called it, waited 10 minutes. Jeannie's pressing numbers. It's taking her back to the same place, pressing more numbers. We finally called the guy where we rented the car from and said, hey, look, we're having an issue with roadside assistance. We can't get in touch with them. They say this is what we're supposed to do if we have a problem. He says, look, I'll try to get in touch with them. So 15 minutes later, we were getting a little restless, gave him a call. He said, roadside assistance put me on hold. I've been waiting for 15 minutes. Now, this went on. I'm not going to go into the full story because it is so... Bottom line, 2 hours later, we are still there. The friends that we were planning on meeting in Gatlinburg had long been to Gatlinburg. We missed meeting them for lunch. And we're told, I finally said, can we fix it and you reimburse us for repairing this tire? They said, sorry, you can't do that. We have to do it, and you have to do what you do through roadside assistance. But for two hours, nobody was able to get contact roadside assistance. We called dealerships all over, and they were calling roadside assistance, saying they couldn't get in touch with roadside assistance. So what is a guy to do? I didn't want to drive the car. I couldn't get the car fixed. Nobody's able to get in touch with roadside assistance. It's getting dark. What are we going to do? Camp in the car? Leave it? Well, the last conversation I had with this man, and I didn't scream at him, and I didn't cuss at him, and I'm trying to be honest, and I'm trying to speak the truth in love. Speak truthfully. So I said, okay, Rick, here's the situation. We could call our friends to drive an hour and 15 minutes to come get us and then take us to Gatlinburg. I guess we could rent another car, but you'll have to figure out what to do with this car. Or we can take our chances and drive to the airport, which is a different direction from where we were going. And I said, if we choose to drive, what happens if the tire blows and we have a wreck and then we're killed? I said, I'll tell you what will happen. Our children will sue you. Really give me a sense of satisfaction there. I probably didn't need to say that. See, right after that is when I invite him to church. Hey, I'm the minister of the Northeast Church of Christ. After we sue you, I'd love you to come to church. All right, be honest. Another thing that we can do is replace the negative and the sinful with the positive and the that which is redeeming and valuable. And so if you look closely at this passage in Ephesians 4, one thing that Paul does, he says, take away this, put away this, don't do this, but do this. And so there is a reality in our lives that as we remove things or make conscious efforts to remove that which is negative and fill our lives with those things that are encouraging and valuable and hopeful, kind of like the passage in Philippians 4:8 that says, whatever is true and honorable, let your mind dwell on those things. It's the same way with what we do. And so Paul says to those who have stolen, quit stealing. Don't steal anymore. But instead, do this. Work hard. Share with others. Don't use your mouth to hurt or destroy whatever it is you might be feeling. Make the conscious effort to say the right thing. And I would say, related to that, sometimes we just need to avoid triggers. So if you're at the workplace and it's typical for people to gather around and gossip and complain about the boss or about the working conditions or whatever it is people complain and gossip about, maybe you need to make the conscious choice so you don't get caught up in that, to maybe say, I'm not going to participate in it anymore because it doesn't do any good anyway. All we do is just sit together and complain and argue, and nothing good or productive is ever done. I know somebody who used to get very angry watching the news or seeing something on social media, and he finally made the decision, I'm going to quit watching the news. Now, I know for some of you, that would be like serious heroin withdrawal to not watch the news. Some of you are news junkies, and that's fine. If it doesn't fuel that anger and those negative feelings that cause pressure in your life that explode in all kinds of different ways. And this point, getting back to what Nick talked about last week, and this whole time issue and this pressure of time, is understanding that we are not powerless, and we do have control over the things in our schedule that cause that pressure to increase in our lives. We're not powerless. And so we do have the power to simplify. We do have the power in our lives that we can make choices to simplify things so that life is not as complicated or stressful. And I'm not saying we take ourselves off the grid or go Amish, but there are some practical things we can do to decrease the pressure in our lives. And the next screen says what some of these things are. You can trim your schedule. And maybe you say, well, I can't do it. I'm all packed up. I'm too busy. But you say that, and maybe you spend 4 or 5 hours a week playing golf, which it's fine. There's nothing wrong with playing golf 4 or 5 hours, but don't say you don't have time to do important things that you need to do. Maybe one of those things is recreation and 4 or 5 hours of golf. That's fine, but you need to think about it, and you need to look at your whole life and your family's whole life in that light. Maybe you need to continue in all those activities you have with your children and all the different things that they do and all those activities. But I tell you, things have gotten so much more complicated now than when I was a kid. And of course, don't you hate it when somebody goes, back when I was a kid? But it's the truth. I played baseball, and we went out, we did have practice, and then we had games, but during that age of growing up, we didn't even know anything about these competitive leagues and the intense practice and traveling all over the place to compete. And so I'm not saying that select sports and traveling a lot is wrong. Maybe it's worth it. But maybe it's not. It depends. So I suggest you get together with your family, your husband, your wife, whoever your loved ones are, or get together with a friend if you're in a situation that you're not married, you're single. Talk about these things. And encourage each other to try to understand that to say, once again, to say, I don't have enough time, that is a lie. It's a lie. It is a downright lie. And it gives us the excuse to justify being so stressed and upset and angry and under pressure that it comes out in all these destructive ways. I have enough time. God gives us the same 24 hours in a day. I have enough time to do what God is calling me to do. Did I sound angry when I said that? I tried to be. I'm trying to make a point. We have enough time to do what God is calling us to do. That's where the rub is, isn't it? That's the rub. In discovering what that is. So maybe that involves me making a decision with my family to remove this or that and make a commitment once a week to have game night and just play with my kids. I could say more, but you know, I'm walking down the steps. Chad, I got you one Sunday. I started walking down. And then I went back up, and he said, you just blew my mind doing that, right? I'll show you again. Our kids, our grandkids, members of our family, they watch us, they look at us, they see us, they learn from us. And our children deserve more than dad's angry all the time. And our kids deserve more than mom is uptight all the time. But I believe by the power of God we can be peacemakers and we can change. Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they are the sons of God." And so when we find that center in our own lives and find that peace, and it might not always be easy, it may take steps to get there, I may struggle with it, but God promises me through His presence, through His Spirit, through others intervening in my life, that I can get to that place, a place of quiet rest in my heart. So I can share that not only with my kids and my grandkids, but with others. We're calling them to a life of peace too, aren't we? And we're asking God to help us let them see the peace in us. Whatever your need might be, you may be ready to commit your life to Jesus. And if you want to be baptized this morning, we will meet with you and we will take care of that. You may be just looking in your heart and mind. Maybe you don't have all the answers. You just want to talk more. You want to study. We want to do that with you too. And I don't claim to be standing up here as somebody who has it all together and has all the answers and I know everything. I never struggle with anything. I'm not coming from that place. But we're all working on it. And we want to help you wherever you are. Some of you may need to go to counseling, and we can help provide counseling for people who are struggling with these gut-wrenching things. But let us know. We love you. We want what's best for you, and let's stand and